It is Sunday, July 7th, 2013, and this is episode 25 of the Defensive Security Podcast. My name is Jerry Bell. As usual, the thoughts and opinions I express in this podcast are mine and do not represent those of my employer. Well, to all of my U.S. friends, I hope everybody had a good Independence Day. I know here in the South, we had quite a rainy time. And in fact, we didn't actually get to see any fireworks because it has pretty much rained since last Monday. The good news is most of the local fireworks are spread out over about a month's time, so I should be able to see fireworks between now and when the kids go back to school. So, yeah, hey, maybe it worked out for the better. Well, the first story I have is obviously about Edward Snowden and his continued fight to get asylum. The most recent news I see is that both Venezuela and Nicaragua have essentially extended an offer of asylum. I think the problem is there's some logistical issues with him getting to their soil. And we already saw, for instance, with the Bolivian president being grounded as they flew over Austria. That could be a bit of a challenge. The more interesting thing from a security perspective is that the Jester, who is a U.S. patriotic hacker, has basically sworn to attack the government sites of any countries who offer him asylum, and we've already seen a couple of instances of that. Personally, I don't think it's right. I think what is being done is criminal, but I understand his perspective, and I'm assuming it's a him. All right, next, and somewhat related, the Interior Minister of Germany has warned its citizens, or the German citizens who are privacy conscious, against using US-based internet services for obvious reasons. So like the story I talked about last week, I really expect that all of this NSA spying debacle is going to have some relatively significant negative repercussions against U.S. internet businesses. And probably the most ironic part is that, you know, this is just a situation where what the U.S. is doing is coming to light. And I think over time, we're really going to find out that the U.S. is just one player on the field. And most governments are doing this either alone or in concert with one another. All right, the next story is from California. The Attorney General of California released a data breach report for 2012. And interestingly, about 1.4 million of the 2.5 million people impacted would not have been impacted if the organizations who lost the data had used encryption. And so in the report, the Attorney General, or whoever wrote the report on behalf of the Attorney General, is urging the California legislature to pass some legislation which requires organizations to protect personal data of California residents using encryption. Now, that would certainly be interesting to figure out what constitutes the right kind of encryption to protect data without having to worry about disclosure. All right, the next story comes from the CSIS, and there's some really interesting statistics in this report. And again, the links to these stories are in the show notes. And the headline here is that, according to the report, 84.3% of all virus infections occur as a result of drive-by attacks. So basically, drive-by downloads, you go to a website and it offers up an exploit kit which infects your computer. The statistic is a little surprising, but I guess in the context of what's happening, it really shouldn't be all that surprising to me. There are some broken down numbers based on web browsers that are attacked, and Internet Explorer 9 is the most attacked, and that is followed closely, actually not so closely, by Chrome, and then closely by Internet Explorer 8, and then there's a whole bunch more under that. Looking at it from an operating system view, Windows 7 is just ahead of Windows XP, and I think, interestingly, we'll probably start seeing a trend away from Windows XP as more of the malware authors really start to focus on the supported platforms, in a similar manner to how we really don't see many new attacks against Windows NT, even though we all know Windows NT probably is very vulnerable to many things. It just doesn't have a whole lot of market share left. Now, I think it's probably going to take a long time for XP to whittle down its install base, but the new hotness is certainly Windows 7 and Windows 8 coming on strong. And then possibly the most interesting and least surprising part of the report is that 61% of the attacks took advantage of Java. And the one thing to keep in mind here is that most of these exploit kits have a whole package of different exploits they'll try. And so they may try Java first. And so if they stumble upon a vulnerable Java, they don't actually have to go and try Adobe Reader or Flash or some other component. And so you'll see statistics skewed in the favor of Java. But at the same time, you know, Java is somewhat in a indefensible position. They have lots of bugs, and probably the even more alarming part is it takes so long for people to patch. I think one of the most recent stories was it on average people are 2 years behind in patching Java. And when you think that most of the recent Java updates have fixed anywhere from 20 to 40 major remotely exploitable holes, and I think there's been 4 updates in 2013 alone, you know, you've got to imagine there are just hundreds and hundreds of vulnerabilities to pick from on any given, quote, average PC on the internet. And so if I were an exploit kit writer, I would pick Java first too, because it's the most simple and straightforward and is the most reliable. So what does that tell us? That we really, 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 really need to keep our software up to date, and that we have to be cognizant that the web is becoming the de facto way to infect workstations with malware. All right, the next report comes from the Industrial Controls CERT, or ICS CERT. And this is the CERT that deals with the industrial sector, so the power companies and utilities, general utilities and that sort of thing. Groups who have industrial controls, so PLCs and SCADA systems and that sort of thing. And this report pointed out that for a period at the beginning of 2013, over half of the attacks in their constituency were against energy companies. And the report says that the victims were primarily targeted with watering hole attacks, SQL injection, and spear phishing. So nothing particularly novel about these, but obviously it's concerning to see an uptick of attacks against a particular sector like energy. It may denote some particular focused activity to try to disrupt, for instance, the power grid. Now, one of the most interesting and concerning parts of the report talks about some incident response activities that happened. So apparently ICS CERT has an incident response team that will go on site. And in the cases that they do, most of the time they're finding that they really can't track down what happened because there's insufficient logging available. All I can say is drive space is cheap, bandwidth is relatively cheap, and it's becoming really, really imperative that in every case that's practical, logs are stored off of the system that they're logging and hopefully out of the reach of the people who administer the systems that the logs are coming from. This is so incredibly important in incident response. I can't tell you how many times I have been involved in responding to an incident and find out that the only logs that are available are those that are on the server. And kind of by definition, when you have a compromised server, you really can't trust anything that's on the server. There's just so many different uses for having those logs off. If a server becomes corrupted, it might not even have anything to do with a security incident. But if your drive image becomes corrupted, you really, obviously without spending thousands of dollars and lots of time trying to forensically recover the data off those drives, you really don't know what's going on. You can't necessarily pinpoint what exactly happened and how to prevent it in the future. So get those logs stored offsite. And then once you have them somewhere, start thinking about how to look at them. But that's a discussion for a different day. All right, the next story is a pretty crazy story from a Texas TV station who did an investigation into security incidents inside the state of Texas government. So some of the highlights of their findings were 6,400 cases of keystroke loggers on systems owned by the government since 2009, 2 million cases of backdoors, and 572,000 infected servers and hard drives. I don't quite understand how that plays with the 2 million backdoors or the 6,400 keyloggers. I think the point there is maybe it's 572,000 servers. I'm not really 100% sure, but the headline of the article is that the Texas government is ill-prepared to handle the volume of malware incidents they're seeing. And I think this is symptomatic of a problem that is just going to keep becoming larger and larger and larger. And that's that malware on workstations and servers is just becoming an epidemic. And it creates lots of problems. Obviously, it can allow attackers to control your networks, to steal your data. It can destroy systems and data like we saw at Saudi Aramco and in South Korea earlier this year. But even negating the losses from that or those kinds of damaging incidents, just the response required to go and handle 2 million virus infections or whatever the number is getting crazy, and it's only going to get worse. And so I really think at some point we're going to hit this singularity, I guess I'll call it, where something drastic has to change because we just can't afford to keep doing what we're doing and playing whack-a-mole with virus-infected workstations. The final story for this week is Microsoft Tuesday hits, well, on Tuesday. And this week, there are some particularly large headaches for administrators across the land with six critical bulletins and one important bulletin. The six criticals are all remote code execution. There is a .NET framework, a Silverlight, a Windows, an Office, another Windows, and then a Microsoft security software, which is a privilege escalation. That's the important one. I think previously we've talked a little bit about the importance of patching even privilege escalation vulnerabilities, because it's an important aspect to an attacker to be able to elevate their privileges once they get inside your network. And I see quite a few organizations deprioritize those local, in quotes, attacks, right? Because they're not remote, they're not really important, so we're going to defer those to some later date when we can figure out if our applications will break. In any event, these look pretty serious, and I definitely would get on with patching them as soon as possible. Well, there is one more thing I wanted to bring up, and I don't really have any other place to talk about it. So one of the interesting things about running a podcast is getting to look at the logs of who downloads your podcast. And I see some interesting trends. So there's two particular NetBlacks in China who download different episodes of the podcast many times a day. So they, I'm assuming it's some coordinated thing, are downloading just a random podcast maybe every half hour, 20 minutes to half hour or so. And since I started running the podcast, I just looked at the stats, and they've downloaded the podcasts about 9,000 times. So that's quite a lot of bandwidth. And what I find interesting is the same IP addresses from these two Class C NetBlacks will download the same episode day after day after day. And it doesn't really look like a denial of service attack, because, well, they're not really sucking that much traffic, and it's relatively lightweight. Like I said, maybe every 20 minutes or so they'll fetch another version, another episode. But I'm really interested if anybody there in China is listening to this may happen to understand what's going on. Again, it's not really a problem. It's just kind of odd to see the same episodes being downloaded time after time after time. And I'm wondering if there's a better way, or if there are connectivity problems that are causing people to not succeed in downloading episodes. If you have any feedback, drop me a line, info@defensivesecurity.org. I'd really appreciate understanding what's happening. Well, in any event, it is getting on to bedtime. Looks like it's going to be a challenging week after a short week last week. Need to get all caught back up. As usual, you can find the podcast on Twitter @DefensiveSec. You can find me on Twitter @MaliciousLink. The website for the podcast is www.defensivesecurity.org. I have show notes and other good stuff posted up there. And I will talk to you all again next week. Hope you have a great one. Take care. Bye.